We're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance this evening. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay. Are there any agenda changes, additions, or deletions this evening? I'm going to turn it over to Frank. Can we do the introduction? Yes. Sorry, I caught you off guard.
I was getting the students in the water. Make sure that first day is comfortable.
We'll have you. Time. We're going to start with the introduction of our new student representative. As soon as Frank gets over there.
I'm excited to introduce our student board members. We have one, I'm understanding, on her way. But today we have Daniela from Santa Cruz High School, and you get to hear from her in just a moment. So I'm turning it over to you.
Not yet.
Oh. Yeah, sorry. She knew the drill. Okay, welcome, Danielle. So now we're going to go to public comment. Is there anyone here that would like to address the board on items that are not on the agenda? Great.
Okay. So far, so good.
Okay, so now we'll start with the superintendent's report.
Good evening. I, too, want to welcome our new student board reps. Daniela, thank you so much for joining us to the school board. Our student voices are very, very important to us as a governance team, and we appreciate you seeking out this opportunity and participating in this process. And we'll be looking forward to hearing from you throughout the school year. I want to thank our school sites for preparing great back-to-school nights to share information about our instructional and co-curricular programs. I also want to thank trustees who have been able to attend these important nights. It's a lot of work for staffs as they prepare to welcome families. This week, on Tuesday, I was able to participate in a meeting with the Community Foundation, some philanthropists, and representatives from Landed and other fellow superintendents in the county to talk about the Landed program and the opportunity to begin a countywide fund to investors fund to support teachers with down payments on initial home purchases. This is a part of our effort to look at housing supports for our employees. We're going to be bringing forward more information on potential opportunities. There was a lot of interest in the room during the conversation, and I'm excited about the possibility of getting something in place this year. And we'll continue to work to move forward, and if we get a fund in place, engage our bargaining units across the county about what qualifications make sense as we move forward. Because there won't be enough to meet all the need. The Illuminate Parent Portal this week, an email went out to secondary parents to support signups for the new portal in Illuminate. The IT team has been hard at work getting individual emails out to each family with their codes that allow them to access the system. Also, was pleased to have an opportunity to meet with our new police chief on the 23rd of August. Chief Mills was also excited to welcome Bayview students on the first day of school, got an opportunity to be out there and be visible in our community. I really appreciate his support and his commitment to the children and youth in our community. I want to congratulate the following teachers for their Schools Plus Grant Awards: Kathy Mitchell at Bayview, Katie Scrowcroft, Myra Alvarez and Alicia Robertson at Galt, Sally Corbin, Sherry Monty, Catherine Garkey, and Martha Dyer at Mission Hill, Gail Limo and Laura Beach at Soquel High School. And the annual Schools Plus celebration and fundraiser is going to be held on the 30th at 3 o'clock at the Community Foundation, and I'm sure that Claudia can provide us some more information if you want to RSVP and get to that event. So thank you, everyone, and school is off and running.
Okay. Now it's time for our student representative report.
I just I should introduce myself first. My name is Danielle. I'm a senior at Santa Cruz High, as you guys probably already know. We started out our first few weeks really well. Things started out a little bit crazy. I think people are now finding where they need to go to hang out, and so paths have cleared. Front lawn Fridays have started at Santa Cruz High, where every Friday we go out during lunch and hang out in the quad or out in the front lawn and play games. The volleyball team has brought blankets to have picnics there. I think a lot of student opportunities and leadership have been created, I think, starting this year, and actually have been more fully implemented. Each senior class is going to have a meeting in the next couple of weeks to discuss who is representing them. In terms of the upperclassmen and sophomores, they all already have representatives, but freshmen are going to have them soon, I believe. I'd say that's about it for the first few weeks. Thank you very much.
Okay. Board member reports. Do you mind starting, Dee Dee?
Sure. Good evening and welcome to Danielle. I'm happy to have you. I just wanted to report that I attended the Santa Cruz High School back to school night and was very impressed by the teachers' enthusiasm, but also their thoughtfulness in terms of how they're conceptualizing student learning and how they're expressing that to parents and sharing their philosophies and their approaches and their pedagogies. Very, very thoughtful and very, very student-centered. And as a parent of a high school student, that is makes me feel good about the experiences that my child is having in school.
Jeremy?
The need for executive summaries. I'd like to speak very briefly about the need for executive summaries in three areas. The first area that I will only mention here because I'll be speaking to it as part of this evening's consent agenda, number 8.1.6, concerns the need for an executive summary for our LCAP. The second area concerns the need for an executive summary for our overall budget, and the third area concerns the need for an executive summary which could be updated monthly for our bond expenditures. So what exactly do I mean by an executive summary? And I'd like to thank Greg Tor providing me with a precise term to speak about a need that I've been sensing for some time. As defined by Wikipedia, an executive summary or management summary is a short document or section of a document produced for business purposes that summarizes a longer report proposal or a group of related reports in such a way that readers can rapidly become acquainted with a large body of material without having to read it all. Obviously, when we're talking about LCAP, overall budget, and bond expenditures, it is the job of the school board members to read it all. But because the categories and columns and projections can become quite detailed and even at times labyrinthian, it would serve us and the general public well to have these three executive summaries at hand at all times. We can think of these executive summaries as quick, easy reference guides that will remind us of the big picture lest we forget the forest for the trees. And they need not be down to the dollar precise. But what are the big ticket items when we look at budget, LCAP, and then perhaps on a monthly basis, what are the big ticket items that we've spent our money on this month for the bonds? If these three executive summaries could also be disseminated to you, the members of the general public, I think this would help you to follow the discussions and presentations and put our deliberations, which can sometimes seem using language that is particular to education and not always easily accessible, into proper context. Thank you.
I'd like to welcome Danielle, and I'd like you to know that I'd like you to understand the value that you bring from my perspective, and I think the entire team of the board, to help with the deliberation, to know it from the student's eyes on the decisions we make, and how it really affects you in your day-to-day education. I'd also like to congratulate the Harbor High football team. It's their first win in 2 years, and I think that it was wonderful that Jim Simmons wrote about them, and I can't imagine how excited they are for that, and especially knowing that they'll be having a new football field. So that's a great piece to rally around for them. I'm very happy. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Welcome, Danielle. Student voices are really important, and we appreciate your presence here. The Delta parent meeting was well attended. New and returning parents had a lively conversation about their students' homework, about field trips, fundraisers, and the possibilities and plans for the future for their students. I also enjoyed attending the Delta Open House. Each time I go, I have a student guide, and to me, I always ask them how they got there, what their journey was, and I'm reflecting on that. Every single one has said, my old school just wasn't right for me. This one is right for me. And it's such a positive way of talking about their journey. It's not that there was failure or somebody didn't meet their needs. It's just that it wasn't right for them. They're enthusiastic. He showed me all the classrooms. They've had some changes because of space requirement changes that they've had with Cabrillo. And talking about the classes at Cabrillo, I really excited the student that led me around. I've also been working on the Schools Plus celebration that's coming up. It should be a great event, and I think it's really a good opportunity to support our teachers who applied for these grants, got them, and then had these experiences with the their plans and the money that they were received from the grant, what they did with it. So I hope people can make it.
Is it Daniela?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome, Daniela. Glad to hear you're here from Santa Cruz High. You come from a long line of generations of proud Santa Cruzians in this town. In fact, I did also, well, I sort of attended the Santa Cruz High back to school night. Because of parking, I never actually made it inside the building, but I got to talk to a lot of the parents who were very excited and the kids about being at Santa Cruz High. And I went to the Bayview back to school night, met the new principal who's sitting back there, the staffer and the students are very happy about her being there, and everyone seems to be very happy and ready for a great new year at Bayview. That's my report for tonight.
I'm going to try this to see. I had the pleasure of accompanying Principal Klein at Santa Cruz High. We do the interviews for our student reps, and I was very happy to have met Danielle, and I want to welcome you again tonight. I'd like to thank the superintendents across the county for the letter of support for our DACA students that you all signed, and appreciate the continued commitment to all of our students. And I'd also like to thank City Council. Last night they passed a safety zone ordinance regarding parks near schools and just maintaining additional accountability for folks in parks and near our schools. So I want to thank you for that. And I see that Genesis has walked in.
My name is actually Allie Barron.
Oh, hi, Allie.
I'm filling in for Genesis
okay.
today.
Great.
Sorry about that.
No worries. Would you like to just say a couple things about where you're from and what year you are and everything?
My name is Allie, and I'm from Harbor High School. I'm a senior this year. That's pretty much it. I'll just be a substitute for Genesis when she can't make.
Okay, great. Well, welcome and thank you. Nice to have you. Okay, our next item is 7.1, the approval of the minutes from August 23rd. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting?
Move approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Abstain? Okay. All right, our next item is the consent agenda, and Nancy has asked me to give her a moment before we go into consent.
Yes, so you have before you a board policy for Saturday and weekend classes, policy 6176. Our GSCFT president made a small suggestion for a policy or a language change in this policy, and the superintendent agreed it was a good idea. So on page two, there have been five words, I think, removed from the paragraph. From paragraph four on page two, you can see they're just kind of lined out. And so the policy is still submitted, you know, for your review and approval tonight to proceed with it on the consent agenda, or if you would prefer to spend more time looking over the policy again, we can always bring it back on the 27th. But I wanted to point out that that policy was slightly different worded than in your last board book when it came for first reading.
And essentially what it means, we would never require anybody to work Saturday school or work on Saturdays, and this makes the language cleaner, because it's not something that we would require as a district.
It was just boilerplate language from CSBA.
And I want to thank Casey for catching.
Okay. Are there any other questions or items that board members have questions about regarding? Okay. So did you want to make a comment, or do you want to pull this item that you mentioned earlier for the separate discussion, or do you just want to make a comment on it?
I'd like some brief discussion. So I'd like to pull 8.1.6.
We'll vote on it separately. Okay.
And then 8.1.7.
6 and 7?
Yeah, 8.1.6 is group policies, final reading, and 8.1.7, fourth quarter investment report. Just comment and question.
Okay. And okay. Well, we're going to pull it separately. We're going to discuss it, and then we're going to vote on them separately at the end.
Yes.
Okay. Sheila has a question.
I just have one question. The Katie Elliott McRae agreement. It was unclear in reading it what exactly she's training people for.
Pauline, can you address this? This was for the classified PD.
She came and trained for. She was the PIT person, right, Eileen? Yeah, she came and trained our PIT people.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Okay, are there further questions on the items other than 8.1.6.7 and 8.1.6?
8.1.6 and 8.1.7.
Seven, sorry, seven backwards. Okay. Are there any other items? Are there any questions or comments from the public? Okay. Do I have a motion to approve the remainder of the consent agenda?
Approval.
Second.
Okay, this is a roll call motion, so what we do is we vote individually. So I ask for the student recommendation first. So it's an aye or an nay, or an abstain if you're not sure at this time.
Abstain.
Okay.
Abstain.
Okay.
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay, so our next item is item 8.1.6.
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead. Yes.
There's actually two parts of 8.1.6, which are final readings that I'd like to comment on and/or discuss if people have things to say. First up is we have proposed new language for local control and accountability plan. And I'd like to read some part of it in before I talk for a second. I'm on page 49.
Which number is that?
It's 8.1.6, but it's page 49 of 496 in my book.
So
local control.
It's board policy
0460?
046.
Local control.
0A. So the proposed language is, the governing board desires to ensure the most effective use of available funding to improve outcomes for all students. A community-based, comprehensive, data-driven planning process shall be used to identify annual goals and specific actions and to facilitate continuous improvement of district practices. If you turn the page or scroll down electronically, you see that parents are to be engaged, the community is to be engaged, more and more language like this, which I applaud. However, what I'd like to say, coming back to the idea of an executive summary, is without an executive summary on day one, we don't empower our community members because they see an LCAP and it seems labyrinthian, to use the word I used before. It seems difficult to wrap one's head around. There's a lot of education speak. So what we need to do is what places like Berkeley Unified have done, and I've shared some of this with the superintendent. And if we've got, I'm pulling a number out of a hat, $3.5 million, we need to say, here are the nine big categories that add up to 3.3 of those millions. And here's, and then secondly, what we need to do when we give them this executive summary on day one, we need to tell them, and here's how we're going to evaluate whether or not our monies are being well spent. Here's the timeline. Here are the people to do so. Here's the evaluations that we have so far. This then empowers that committee, because what has happened, and I don't blame the current administration, it's just been past practice for as long as I can remember, the committee doesn't get all the information it needs until the last day, and then it's asked, well, let's go ahead and approve it. We're in April, and we need to get this to the full board. So it doesn't really fulfill what the law and what our proposal, the spirit of the proposal. We need to get that information to them soon. And so I'm looking at Frank because, you know, we've talked about this before, and I'm hoping that we're on the same page here in terms of empowering people by giving them an executive summary of the LCAP, because that's really where the action is, that money. We have discretion with it. And then how is that money being spent, and how do we know it's effective? I guess I'm asking.
I'm excited about your comments. The good news is this, Jeremy. We are scheduled to have something rolled out in 3 weeks. Pretty much have a draft now, but in 3 weeks, ready for the public. And so I think you'd be excited to receive this very shortly. So
I think it's empowering. I think it fulfills our obligation to be transparent and to bring as many people from the public in. That's point one.
On this one item?
I have one other item.
Okay, but we are going to vote on this one. So is there a further comment or question from the board on?
Oh, well, there's one other under 8.1.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, because there's so many board policies.
Yeah. The other one is school calendar, which is BP 6111A. And for those of you who are typographic in your literacy, it's 119. Again, I'd like to read our own language here. For each district school, this is proposed and new, the governing board shall adopt a school calendar that meets the requirements of law as well as the needs of the community students and the work year as negotiated with the district's employees organizations. As appropriate, the superintendent or designee shall ensure that the proposed calendar is aligned with assessment and accountability schedules in order to support the district goals for student achievement. One of the things we've talked about is that we have three comprehensive high schools on three different schedules. And if, in fact, our district goals are for both inter and intra dialogue between the schools, I'm wondering if there's a text and subtext to this, or if Chris, I hope I'm not putting you too much on the spot, not asking you to comment on anything definitively, but is this to open up the door for us to talk about calendars?
Well, it's CSBA language, and the reason it's language is that you want to make sure that your school calendars are aligned to ensuring students have an optimal preparation for assessment, and that students are going to be successful. So you want to be thoughtful about that. It's not something we put in there purposefully. This is the language from CSBA.
Okay.
We always are, we negotiate calendar and schedules with the GSEFT, and that's always an ongoing conversation at the table.
One follow-up question, if I could. Are our two middle schools, which seem to be doing such excellent work together and piggybacking off of, poor we said, and feeding off of, and working together. There you go. If I don't have it written down, I won't find. And collaborating very well in the areas of math and English language arts, are they on essentially the same schedule?
They don't have the same bell schedule, but they do have the same collaboration schedule.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Are there further questions or comments on either the items that any of the board policy since Jeremy pulled? Yeah.
On Jeremy's first item, I thank you for bringing it up, Jeremy. And I would only like to add, Frank, that often people in their frustration also say that they when they have questions, they don't know exactly where to get the answers because of the amount of information that's being given, and they get very frustrated. And so I'm hoping that in your rollout that perhaps that could be addressed too, in terms of where people, what is the process by which people can get answers. They're not terribly satisfied by "you don't need to know that," which seems to be one thing that we say when we have lots of information. You know, it's like, well, you don't need to know all that. But sometimes they do want to know something that they want to go into depth in a certain area. So I would just like to add that to your list of what you're taking on. And thanks, Jeremy, for bringing it up.
Dee Dee?
I'd actually like to make two comments, one relevant to the school calendar board policy, and then the other one is about another board policy. With regards to the school calendar board policy, when I read that first sentence that you read out loud, Jeremy,
yes,
the thing that pops out to me most is that whatever calendar or calendars that we put forward, that students need to be at the center and the focal point of those calendars, and meeting students' learning needs, for me, this needs to be the focal point. And if in the future we have any conversations around adjusting calendars or synchronizing calendars, I hope that we can have that student learning at the center of those conversations, and keeping in mind that one size does not fit all. And I think of Delta in particular as a very unique learning experience that is meeting the needs of student learning in ways that other more comprehensive traditional high schools do not. And so whenever these conversations come up, I hope that we can have that as a focal point, and it's written in our board policy as well. So thank you. And then regarding board policy 5111 and 5111.1, I just want to make a comment that around we do a wonderful job as a district of protecting our undocumented students and supporting their families, and I applaud the district for doing that. My concern is around our high school students that are getting ready to graduate and what support and education we're offering them, because if they're college bound and they're undocumented, they may be particularly vulnerable right now. So I'm hoping that we as a district can do whatever we can to support them and guide them through the process, given the political climate that we are operating within.
So it's really a challenging time for them, and it's a challenging time for us because we don't know exactly how to guide them because there's so many unknowns. I did receive an email from an immigration attorney that's going to be doing a presentation at the ELAC meeting at Harbor High School this next week, and she sent us some resources, and we'll continue to seek out resources and information to share with families. And it's also tricky because we don't ask who's undocumented. We just kind of have to blanketly put it out there, and you had, I think, Sheila had suggested that, you know, as we put it out and say, in case you know anyone who might be in need of this information. Yeah.
Any further comment or question? Any comment from the public on these items? Or so it sounds. Am I assuming that we're just that was comment on the board policies as they stand? Okay. Is there a motion to approve item 8.1.6.
Move approval.
Second.
Do we have to do a roll call again?
Yes.
Okay, roll call. Student's recommendation.
Abstain.
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay, so our next item is item 8.1.7.
Right. Yes,
go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I was trying to find my microphone. We're earning a little bit less than 1%, and I know that our money gets pooled with other government agencies, and my only question is there any way we can talk to them about trying to get more than 1%, given the fact that they've probably got a pool of $10 million from various agencies? Is that totally beyond our ability?
We can certainly speak to them, Jeremy, but the investments associated with operational funds, governmental funds, it's very restricted in terms of what it can be invested in.
Can't take it to Las Vegas and put it on
Facebook. Facebook. No.
Okay.
But it's a worthwhile conversation with the team.
That delete that. No, okay.
You can probably throw a dart at someone right now and make a lot of percent. But anyhow, I'm happy to have the conversation with Kathy Treasurer in terms of the future of my life, whether or not it's are there. But again, it's very restrictive.
I mean, there's a potential to earn even a little bit more.
Sure.
It could
happen. Everyone
can benefit. Yeah, thank you. That's it.
Yep. Any further questions or comments? Any comments from the public? Do I have a motion to approve this?
So moved.
Second.
It's a roll call.
Abstain.
Abstain.
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay. So, sorry, it's taking a little slow to get to my next. Our item, so report of items taken in close, actions taken in closed session.
The Board of Trustees conferred regarding the property at 255 Swift Street, Santa Cruz, and 133 Mission Street, Santa Cruz. The Board of Trustees heard information regarding a special education settlement agreement. And we will return to closed session.
Okay, so our first item of business to be discussed is a staff report on students and... Oh, no, that's last time, sorry. That's why I'm lost. That was last meeting.
It's the same thing.
It's still a staff report. It's a staff report, but it's on something else, right?
Yeah, it's on
summer professional development.
Thank you. Summer professional development. That's why I was not fine with the board policy. Thank you.
Okay. Tonight is a report at the board's request. If you recall back in May, the board requested that we come back around this time for a summer school professional development report. And tonight, facilitating that report would be our director of elementary curriculum and assessment is Mary Ann. And for our secondary school would be Julia Haas. So turning it over to you.
All right, thank you. We're both really excited to be here in our new roles presenting to you today. And I don't want to correct Frank, but I also don't want you to be confused. It's not about summer school. It's about our professional development opportunities that we had this summer. In particular, we want to highlight our skill presentation. And I want to start off by talking just a little bit about skill and what skill is. I'm not sure how familiar you are with that term, but it stands for Santa Cruz Instructional Leaders. And we have a team of teacher leaders at each site, led by the principal as the lead learner. And so each site has their own skill team. And the skill members are responsible for their own skill, for their own site's PD, for their own site's professional development. And they're also in charge of leading their professional learning communities. So at elementary school, that'd be the grade level professional communities. And then in secondary, it's more content area based. Let's see. So every August, we have the opportunity to come together as a big district skill team, which means we have about 120 participants, teachers, and administrators. And this summer, we are able to get together and refocus on two areas that have been, one real area of focus, which is our professional learning communities and what we're doing with that Wednesday release time and how to make sure that we're making that time as optimal as possible. So we focus on professional learning communities, but within the framework of some newer learning.
PLCs, or our professional learning communities, came together to learn about basically their power of working together. We call that collective teacher efficacy. Following the work of John Hattie, who has researched the most effective strategies, basically, to institute school change and collective and transformation of schools, collective teacher efficacy is really the sheer belief that teachers make a difference. And that was really our focus of our meeting on the skill day. And I was so wonderful on that August day, to have 120 of the leaders of our district. It was really amazing. And to gather that talent in one room, I just have to say it was almost an emotional experience. It's like, wow, these are the leaders of every school in our district, and they're all here today, engaged, learning, and excited about the new year. So I just, it was a really powerful experience. And by the way, we have a couple of our skill leaders here tonight. I didn't mean to not introduce them. Wendy and Brianna are here tonight to speak about their experiences at the Skill Leaders Award.
Okay. Hello there, board. I know a lot of you. Had some of your children in my classrooms. I teach at Brent Supporting Middle School. And I'm happy to be here today to talk to you. That'll be a good mic. Brent Supporting Middle School, we're working really, really hard, and this is the first year we kind of rolled out the John Hattie effect strategies to increase amazing teacher production and student production, and we're focused on teacher clarity. We're working on our learning goals, we're working on our success criteria, and we're currently developing collective efficacy groups. Don't tell anyone. Sorry, Kristen, but we call it our keg groups. Because, you know, you've got to have something like that for everything. And so we're beginning to gather data on equity and productive academic talk. And this is going to inform, we hope, the entire staff about how teachers and students interact with each other, especially in group discussions in classroom settings. Brent Supporty is also focusing on self-regulation and grounding strategies. Doug Fisher's work on the first 20 days, and we're already on day 14, it goes so fast, and accountable talk. We're also developing an awareness in our grade level teams of the power of positive praise. By the way, hello there, Alan Weiner.
I'm good.
Okay. You look wonderful, and wow, look at you, a senior already. A database has been developed to send positive postcards to every single one of our families. Our goal is to send one to each student and their families throughout the year. This is no small task. So in our grade level groups, every third or fourth Wednesday, that's going to be one of the things that we do. Instead of really going down the negative road in terms of teacher clarity and collective efficacy, we're going down the positive. We're going up the positive road this year. So thank you very much for giving me a chance to tell you about our program.
Hello, everybody. My name is Brianna Bam. I'm a teacher at Mission Hill Middle School. And to build off of what Wendy just shared with you, we're now in our third year of working with the Mission Hill focus on visible learning, which also builds off of John Hattie's work. So what that means is a program that really empowers students to see what the criteria are for their learning in terms of a year, you know, the academic year, and also in terms of their gaining work in a particular class. To be empowered to know where they are in terms of that learning and to know clearly what their next steps are in order to achieve the goal. So we started out, much as B40 did, really working on teacher clarity, clarifying for teachers and for the students what the expectations are about any given lesson or unit or year's academic trajectory. We've also gone through effective teacher feedback, when it should happen, how it should happen, and also looking at peer feedback, and self-assessment to really get students to be able to see where they are in relation to the learning goals set before them, and also to allow them to set meaningful goals for themselves in relation to their learning. So that's our larger focus in Mission Hill. We're currently working in self-selected groups along those lines. We have a group that is kind of onboarding our new teachers with the tenets of visible learning, and then we have other groups of teachers that are working with a choice topic in visible learning. And what Skill kind of allowed the Mission Hill PLCs to do was to really have a framework for really harnessing our collective action. So giving us a framework to thinking about building an environment of trust in these groups, to building experiences of success. Also, collective teacher efficacy helps us to select like mentorship models, be it via video or a model of a teacher doing something effective in a classroom, and also guiding us towards giving each other feedback to help us all move forward as professionals. Thank you.
So
Marianne and I are both really excited about John Hattie's work in making sure that all of our teachers have access to professional development related to visible learning. Throughout the year, we're going to be meeting again with skill teams and doing a little bit more with visible learning each time. And I invite any of you, we have a couple of extra books. We're doing a book study on visible learning as a leadership team, an admin leadership team. If you're interested, you can stop by our curriculum office and we have some copies for you. We can give you the first reading so you can try to keep up with us. But it's really exciting work, and it's not anything, what I really like about it, what speaks to my teacher self is that it's not anything new. But the frame that it's been put into and all the research that's behind it really just helps you to know that you're on the right track and that we're using those high-yield instructional strategies. And collective teacher advocacy is one of the highest instructional practices that teachers and educators can engage in, and that effect size of 1.57, we didn't explain this earlier, but a 0.4 effect size is about how much growth you'd expect from a typical instructional strategy in 1 year. So 0.8 would be twice the growth if you got that in 1 year. So 1.2 would be three times the growth in 1 year. So if you do collective teacher efficacy really well, you can get up to 1.57 times the growth and see that growth in your students. And we know that some of our students need to have that type of growth throughout the school year to get to where they need to be in order to be career and college ready. So, just continuing on, we're going to be continuing the focus throughout the year, again, with John Hattie's work, and also tying it back to our PLCs and our PLC work. We have a few other things we wanted to report on besides skill. We had some new August trainings. I don't know how aware you are of these, but we are going to be talking more about MAP and CPAA. Our next board meeting, so we'll save the details for then. And then we had a certificated PD day. We're so thankful to be able to offer that to all of our teachers. And we also had a classified PD day. And there's more notes on each of these in your board cover sheet for our presentation. And we also had some other summer professional development that teachers participated in, some science regarding NGSS, mathematics, regarding our new CPM adoption in high school and just math in general. And then also we did a lot of Illuminate training. You'll probably be hearing teachers and administrators talking about Illuminate for a very long time. And that concludes our report.
Thank you. Are there questions from the board? Dee Dee, go ahead.
So I'm very interested in the teacher clarity goal at both of the middle schools, and I was wondering if Wendy or someone could provide some specific examples of what teacher clarity might look like for the students and for the teachers in any given day at Brands of 40, for example.
I'd love to tell you something about it. I've got a nice big voice. For instance, this morning, my students walked in, and we looked at our transition board, and then we looked at our learning goals. And the learning goals are listed clearly. They sometimes change from day to day. Sometimes they change from week to week. And we review the learning goal. One of our learning goals for today was that we were going to be re-looking at a piece of poetry that the students have been writing, revising it, and working in peer groups. At the end of the time, depending on the day, they might do an exit ticket to determine, so I can see, well, was the learning goal met? Or they may be just showing me turning something else in, or talking to each other. But the teacher clarity part is that there isn't anything hidden. There's no hidden agenda anymore in a classroom setting. The learning goals are up there. No, they're not identified by 8.1.253 standard. But it's been put into student speak. So the students can hold on to that. Our learning goals and success criteria for a particular unit is given to students at the beginning of the unit so they know if they're writing a piece of argumentative writing, what the criteria is, and how they're going to meet that criteria. It used to be, and I've been teaching a long time, that it was a little bit of a, you know, a secret, like, well, this is going to unfold, and I'll let you know, and maybe I'll tell you what you were supposed to learn by the end. Now there's no question. The clarity needs to be there for the teacher, but also for the students and for the parents. So success criteria learning goals are now starting to go home, whether it's via the computer or whether the students are expected to have a parent signature, those kinds of things so they know. That's one element of teacher clarity.
Thank you. That's a wonderful example. And may I just comment that it seems like there are multiple benefits of that kind of teacher clarity about students' learning, and one of them might be the students' own reflection on their own learning and the metacognitive skills that they can develop through that and make adjustments. If they're not meeting those goals that that you've set out for them, they can reflect on that and maybe adjust their own learning or seek out help to get what they need to meet those goals. Thank you.
Sheila.
So I got a little lost in the terms. But I think I'm kind of getting it now. But the collective teacher efficacy talks about the teacher belief, shared belief, the true collective action they can positively influence. But it sounds like what's actually happening is that the teachers are constantly kind of clarifying where they're going. I mean, the belief needs to be there, but the action is the everyone kind of more, I don't want to say staying on the same page because that's not quite right, but everyone is focused on the same direction.
Yes,
that
same
they're taking the kids.
Same focus, same goal. So, for example, in a PLC, that might look like we have all done this poetry assignment during class. Now we're all going to look at student samples of that work, and we're going to put them into categories of exceeding standard, meeting standard, didn't quite meet standard, not meeting the standard. And we're going to look at these different categories and look at the skills that they had and what made those kids successful in this category over here. And so how do we move these kids to have these same skills? What strategies might we try? And so that's also where John Hattie's work can come in handy, is because he has a list of other high-effect strategies you might want to try with your students in the class.
Okay. And if in the process of the teaching, one of the greatest parts of teaching is when there's a surprise in terms of the direction it goes, that the students actually are either taking something a different direction or they are having an insight that you never thought of. How does that fit with this in terms of this? Is that brought back then to the teacher groups, or is that more just happens individually?
Teachers, do you want to share about those moments in your class?
So I would say that when speaking about collective teacher efficacy, that's really a bit that happens like in our PLCs, and it's really the collective belief that what we do in our classrooms, the instructional decisions we make, the resources that we use together, the work that we share, and the feedback we give to each other can truly make a difference for our students. And that we're willing and able to work together to make that happen for them.
Got it. Okay.
Right? And so when we get in our classrooms, actually setting up an environment like what you just described, where the learning goals are very clear and our trajectory is also clear, in a way it actually facilitates those moments. Mm-hmm. Because students now, they see where they are, it's clear, and it frees up so much space for them to be innovators, to collaborate. It's really a beautiful thing to see happen. I don't know if you've had that experience as well, but it's really quite lovely.
That's cool. I have another question, but I want to make sure. Doesn't nobody have a question?
This is your last question.
I just want to understand visible learning, which left me, I mean, I think I sort of understand it in terms of it's really clear to everybody. Is that what that means? Because I didn't understand what visible learning meant.
Yeah, just to clarify a few things. Collective teacher, John Hattie studied, I mean, tens of thousands of teaching strategies, basically, and ranked them according, you know, and this is a mega study, meta-analysis of all the data that's out there. Collective teacher efficacy is a very high yield strategy of 1.57 effect size. The strategy of teacher clarity, or that's another element of visible learning, it has an effect size of close to 8.8. So it's not the same as collective teacher efficacy. And what he has done is ranked, in surprisingly, he's ranked all the instructional strategies that we use, the things that we surprisingly think have a very, we do it because we think it works, he's disproven some things as well. So we're focusing on the things that have been really proven to have the greatest impact on student learning. So the visible learning is really making learning visible.
Clear, making it clear.
Making clear. Well, yeah, teacher clarity is one part of it. But, you know, he also talks a lot about feedback, the importance of feedback, and what kind of feedback can we give any kids or children. Metacognition, as Dee Dee mentioned, as far as children, where they know where they are in the learning process. I know what I'm being taught, I know where I am, and I know what the next steps are. And that's a huge part of it, you know. And I'm going to, and part of it, too, is like allowing children to struggle with things so that they have, that things are hard, and they will come out the other side. We'll be able to transfer that knowledge to another situation. So it's not just teacher clarity. However, that's an entry point that we can start with. It's like it has a double the rate of learning by simply being very clear with your learning goals and how do I know the students have learned that? What are the success criteria?
But it's the learning goals, not how they do on a test or...
Right. Yes.
It's the goals in terms of
process.
How they think.
Yeah, yeah. And what Dee Dee mentioned about getting students then to be able to self-reflect, see where they are, use their metacognitive skills, and then move themselves along. So the reason they point at visible learning is what you were just saying. It's making learning visible to students. So a lot of times things are not visible to students, like the learning goal. They might sit through a whole entire class, and you ask them what they learn, and they say, I don't know. We did a worksheet on some math stuff. But
so they're judging for themselves what they're
exactly,
learning and how they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they can rate themselves on how well they're doing
mm-hmm.
in their classes.
Okay. Thank
and
you.
Another angle to look at this is demystifying the teaching and learning process. Hence, it becomes visible.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Any comments from the public? Thank you so much.
Thank
yes,
you.
Thank you very
you.
Much for being here.
Can I just say that I really want to thank Marianne and Julia. The feedback from the Skill Professional Development Day from the teachers was really positive. They appreciated the opportunities to work together and the learning that they had, and I want to thank Julia and Marianne for setting that up. I also want to thank, there were a lot of people involved in setting up Summer Professional Development. Frank, Molly, Eileen, and Curtis, and I know I'm forgetting people, Stacey O'Farrell, all people instrumental in setting up the summer learning opportunities for our both our certificated and classified team. And it was the first time we provided a full extra day of professional learning for both our certificated and classified teams. It was a lot of work to orchestrate, and we learned a lot. And I think there were some really positive outcomes, and we're looking forward to the opportunity of having another year with that time to work with staff.
Quickie. This is quick, Chris, but I was thinking as I was reading this how great it would be when we do our board talking about the year and talking about what we're focusing on. If some of this that you're planning could be brought to us then, because it helps to point all the arrows in the same direction.
So like the governance, when we do the governance goals,
yeah,
for
even just this, it tells where's the practical thing you're laying out from where what we've been talking about, where it's been headed.
Okay, let's talk more about that.
Okay. Our next item is new business, the parcel tax bylaw revision final reading.
Yes, thank you. After our last meeting, we brought forward to you this evening a revision of the Parcel Tax Oversight Committee language. And as the summary sheet shares with you here, we made some modifications to the composition of the committee. And we'll simplify the language regarding parent representatives of both the elementary and high school districts. And so it's a recommendation tonight for the board to adopt as a final reading the revised Parcel Tax Committee bylaws.
Are there any questions? Yes, go ahead.
Quick question. Thank you for adding the distinction between having an elementary parent and a high school parent representatives. Where does middle school fit? Are they in the elementary?
Secondary.
Secondary side. So when you say high school, you mean secondary. Okay.
Perhaps we should modify it to say secondary. Mm-hmm. Like that.
That might help, just to make it, we're not overlooking the middle schools.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sheila.
So, Pat, can you talk to me about, I know last time we brought this up, I was concerned about it just being the public can come and talk if they want to talk. And there also doesn't seem to be anything that talks about the public being able to address particular issues that are on the agenda. And it seems like that did change. And not that I necessarily expected it was going to change because I said it was, I wanted it to. But I'm wondering what your thinking was about that.
And Sheila, I know that we talked about how we have this item under 5.1, which is the can you take public comment at the beginning of each meeting. And that was kind of the intent that says we can have folks and welcome folks to come and share comments with us about that. And I have to think back, Chris, too, that we had a conversation regarding...
is it because the agenda really is, did we spend the money the way we were supposed to spend it? That's the only agenda item that should be there. There really isn't, other than speaking to the Parcel Tax Oversight Committee about, you know, programs or things they want them to know about, that's the only agenda item.
Well, okay, and I thought of that in the middle of my asking myself this question last night, that the agenda is really just making sure the money is spent. But on the other hand, one of the things that was clear to us was that there were people who knew what that actually meant, our decisions about the money, how it played out in the schools. And in moving away from those people, I was hoping we would give them the respect of a voice in a way that wasn't just like, oh, you know, if anybody thinks of it, they can come, but rather that it at least was brought to them in some kind of a way that they, that it was more, that they know that they're wanted, that they know that the meetings are coming, that, that something is happening that is actually encouraging their input without making them be part of the final
decision. And I think in our last conversation, I'm not mistaken, Sheila, so this is, as Chris says, this is relative to this committee's function. But I seem to recall the last meeting, too, we talked about in an advisory capacity, how might the superintendent solicit and receive, from an advisory perspective, input. This is the function of this oversight committee. Says, is it spent in alignment with the language? Which there's a separate thing which we're talking about. Is there advisory capacity of or suggestions of if there are any changes? Right, that's some of the discussion last time we had, Chris. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess it's in two ways. One would be that that you would just have an advisory capacity that would be separate. The other way would be if I were a member of that committee. I'm just thinking of some of the things that came up over the years. If I was a member of that committee, and I'm like, yeah, that money was spent well, but in fact, what I didn't know was that money that was to be spent for X, it was in this gray area, and it really was, you know, spent for Y. You know, that it wasn't obvious without knowing the details of the how it actually worked. So I was hoping that there would be a way to make those people who put so much effort into it and who have thought about it so much have an informative voice. And you're right, that could also be that the superintendent would establish something like that, or that you would establish something
like
that.
Well, we have that in the Budget Advisory Committee. We have that in the budget survey and needs survey that we send out every year. And people are still going to be able to come to the meeting and speak to the Parcel Tax Oversight Committee.
Okay, I don't think we have that in the budget. We have the budget discussion, but we don't have a discussion of is this parcel tax in fact serving us well. We don't have the...
We have that conversation when we go out to renew the parcel tax.
Yeah. And that's enough to you.
Well, I mean,
I guess it's not enough to me. I mean, I feel like sitting there, I learned a lot,
mm-hmm.
and I think we're losing a lot. if we say, well, you can show up at a budget meeting and say something about the budget, we're losing a lot from people who were actually struggling very hard to understand it.
But is it my I'm sorry, I'm just going to jump in. Is it my understanding is that the budget advisory, I mean, at the parcel tax oversight committee, this is the evolution of what they felt should be the proper way to, you know, make the comment on the spending. So your sense is that we're losing some institutional knowledge, but it sounds like the actual function of the committee,
process.
The actual function of the committee is what that institutional knowledge is in agreement that, and then when we go out to renew the parcel tax, that is when the board and the district takes assessment from the reports that we're getting from that group, mm-hmm. and the outcomes and how we're spending every time we have a budget.
I would not agree that the committee would say that this was the end result of what they wanted, only for that piece.
And I think, Sheila, that the part that we modified in terms of the agenda, that speech that Chris spoke to earlier, that opening with receiving public input, that might be the venue for people to share.
Yeah, and that's why I actually
but
thought
also,
if we simply...
We couple that with notifying people, right, that says this is happening, right?
We can often say, everybody's invited to everything. You can come and talk. I mean, it's a little bit like Jeremy's point about, you know, you've got to give people the kind of information that they can do something with. And so, you know, to kind of just make a general statement of, well, you can show up if you want. If you have something to say, go ahead and say it. As opposed to, you know, you had concerns. We want to make sure that you know that you are welcome to bring those kinds of questions and concerns and to inform this committee.
So that we would definitely meet with the outgoing committee mm-hmm. to have that conversation. I mean, they are valued and we'll bring them here to recognize them too because they've put in a lot of time.
Right. So my only concern then would be that would work now. And over time, we're not putting that into our guidelines for the parcel tax committee. Where we could take care of it for right now for the people who know what kind of opinion and information they're giving, but have we said, for instance, the superintendent will meet with any interested people who would like to know about how this committee runs and what they would do if they had some concerns. If that was part of our parcel tax guidelines, then we would be sure we were institutionalizing it. I don't like to cause a lot of trouble here, but I do feel over the time that I started out thinking just make it as simple as possible. I changed a little bit.
Just process-wise, Sheila, because this can always be revisited.
Sorry?
I said this can always be revisited.
Uh-huh.
And I'm hearing what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
If we, as superintendent saying, if we meet with the committee and share with them what these changes are going to be, and share them that there is each meeting is going to open with an opportunity and solicit public comment. Perhaps throughout the course of this year, we solicit that feedback and bring back to the board. Says, or you could potentially say, can we re-agendize this a year from now to solicit how things have gone?
Yeah, I would have felt a lot better if we'd done that. We had allowed them to speak up to us before we did it, but it's kind of late for that now. I think that many of them expected that would happen, that they would get a chance to give some feedback. So I'm uncomfortable with us not having done that. But I see your point. We can always go backwards.
I'm going to go to Dee Dee. Mm-hmm. Did you have a question?
Yeah.
A comment, too?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just thinking of part of what you said, and that was inviting people to come to speak. We posted on the calendar, right, that couldn't we put something on there that public is invited to come and speak during, you know, just to have it out there so that people know? Because I think when you want to go to something like that, you look on the calendar to see where and when and all that, and that might cover some of it.
We'll cover some of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Dee Dee.
I just had a question about the process by which we're going to fill these positions, because it's crossed out on the bylaws.
are we going to solicit applications from the public and then there's be some selection process, and what is that?
I would suggest that we do that and we post it and open that up and see what we receive. I'm not sure how you've done in the past. Just simply post it on the web. We can reach out to PTAs, to school.
And we'll talk to existing members, too.
That's right. Great. That might be a natural place to start.
Yeah.
So they'll apply, and who will do the selection of the applicants?
If it's anything like our Bond Ever site, we'll have a...
No.
We'll have to recruit.
who approves those folks? Because maybe some check.
I guess I'm just asking for some clarity about the process because it's not apparent to me in the bylaws.
Right, it's not apparent. Replacing is very apparent. Just not picking in the first place.
So currently it's, you know, it's on application basis. It's, we still have to recruit.
Yeah.
We currently have to recruit. It's hard. People are not clamoring.
So historically
we haven't had
multiple applicants for one spot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And here the section to God says the board shall solicit application for the public at large.
Mm-hmm.
So if I would think that would be a...
Use that process.
Yeah, but I said this, with the exception that you're saying to fill board of seats, this should be that the board designated to the superintendent shall solicit application to the public at large to fill vacancies. And it says information shall be announced on the district website and in local media.
Mm-hmm.
It could certainly be that.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a good suggestion, I think, to modify this to include that.
And if we were fortunate that we had more than one applicant for one of these positions,
which
we can dream.
Yeah.
We have a lot of active parents
out
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get them engaged.
I have a question about the people.
Can we go back? So does that?
It does, but I think we will have, because we're reducing this committee significantly, we may have more than one person interested in some of these positions and I think there needs to be a fair process of selecting them.
So we could do a lottery with any people qualifying for the various spots. We could just do a lottery.
We just have to say what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And then,
okay. I just wanted to be fair. And
there's multiple numbers in the lottery.
So just a point of, before I go to the public, I just want a point of process. So this is coming to us for a second reading, but it sounds like we're making several amendments to the bylaws.
Suggestions.
One
word, secondary.
Well, no.
There were two things.
Secondary selection process.
Yeah, and selection process.
Right. So you're feeling comfortable that given our timeline.
District. We have a high school district. That is the name of our district.
Okay.
That's true.
Did you hear that, Dee Dee?
Yeah.
That's inclusive of all secondary.
Can it be in parens, 7 to 12? It's like high school,
so
7 to 12.
It, but
yeah.
The name of our district is the high school district,
not the
secondary district.
Okay.
Good point. I just don't want our middle school parents to feel like they're being left out.
Okay.
So put the parens in. We're going to add this. There's a suggestion we modify to include selection.
A selection process to clarify.
And in the event that there's multiples, equivalent qualified to be a lot.
So I just want to know, I never thought of this until I read it three times, why we're specifically having a senior citizen, considering the senior citizens usually don't pay for partial taxes. I'm wondering why we're put that in.
Because most oversight committees include that.
I know, but it doesn't make sense.
But we do have a lot of senior citizens who do pay the partial taxes.
I don't think most don't. I think...
You think
and,
most
people. And maybe some more would pay it if there was a senior citizen on the oversight committee.
Okay, I'll take that. Are there? I'm going to go to the public if there's not. Are there any comments from anyone regarding this issue?
So the recommendation is to approve. I'm going to suggest that someone make a motion, possibly with these amendments to the policy.
So moved with these amendments.
Well, can you? Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Student recommendations?
Aye.
Did you get all that?
Who was the second?
Quiet.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so our next item is the resolution on the GAN limits.
And I'm just going to read this into the record as an annual process. We go through that, we pull up the books. The GAN requires that each government agency and school district help to adopt an expenditure limitation based upon some appropriations in 1970 and just like annual change in the consumer price index and annual change in population. This routine resolution presented to the board annually since the passage of the proposition. When the state legislature enacted Senate Bill 98 and Senate Bill 1999 to implement Prop 98, the legislation also had statutes governing how to calculate appropriations and
those
limits.
I saw
it
on those drug commercials.
If anybody had to get it out of that.
Yeah.
That's how it goes to my head then. So we provide you this calculation as we're going through it. You're going to see the other actuals in a few minutes. But the revisiting the 1617 version, which is what it was, also reference for the 2017 appropriation bill. It's a resolution recommended for your approval.
Are there any questions from the board?
Pat, in short, this reflects larger amount per ADA that we get from the state. An increase of the 2% or whatever.
That's right.
Is that it?
Yep.
Thank you.
Any comments or questions from the public? It's a recommendation from staff that we approve this resolution.
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, so this is another roll call, so we'll start with the students.
Abstain.
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Okay. Our next item is opening enrollment.
Okay, on your cover sheet here, we have broken down for you what the variances have been between our budget projections and also what numbers we're seeing relative to the prior year CBED numbers. So we've broken down for you both elementary, middle schools, high schools, and small schools. And you'll see that on your cover sheet that we have items that are both over and under budget projections. On the cover sheet for the opening school enrollment. In elementary schools, we have 45 over the budget projection, but our actual data as of September 6th were 159 below our 2016 CBED numbers. So we're seeing a decline in our elementary schools. But the actual number, and we're going to spend time, Chris and I, the technology team has been so immersed in this transition to Illuminate that we're going to spend time to go back and understand what some of these variances are associated with. So 45 over budget projection. Again, recall the budget projection we used for the budget was some of the Decision Insight numbers. Decision Insight is the company we contract with for multiple years. Last year, they were very close to the projected, close to the actual enrollment. The projections, their conservative projections, are very close to the actual enrollment. So there's a company we hire who does all these projections for us, looks at birth rates, looks at construction, looks at all these other things, to determine what our enrollments can look like in the district. It helps us plan on multiple fronts. And so in middle schools, we're 4 under projections, and we're 7 under our actual 7 under our 2016 CBEDs. In the high schools, we're 51 over our budget projections, and we're 133 over our 2016 CBEDs. We're seeing growth in the high schools, which we anticipated, and we're seeing that happen. And then small schools were 13 over budget projection and 8 over the 2016 CBEDs. And from what I recall last year talking about Decision Insight, too, some of the things they were looking at, which they commented on, was that our district was not alone in seeing a decline in kindergarten enrollment. Mm-hmm. This is a Bay Area phenomenon. And so they wanted to see whether or not that trend was going to continue. And when this firm builds for us 10-year projections, they made an effort in their conservative estimates to extrapolate that number into a trend. And so what we'll do with them as well, we'll go back and look at them. First of all, we're going to spend time to understand what these variances are associated with. And then we'll go back with Decision Insight and weave these numbers back into the data they presented so that they can reflect on it as well, because these numbers will also modify what our enrollment projections look like for the next multiple years. So now they'll have a little more trend data as opposed to an isolated year. So we're going to work with them. We're working on our IT team, and we'll talk to our schools as well, too, about what knowledge we have about, you know, and Chris has had some feedback about some of the high school growth we've seen from our principal about some of those trends are associated with. But we're going to spend a little more time and understand that even further. Okay.
And we'll bring that back with the CBETS report.
Yeah, definitely. And so staffing-wise, we looked at these numbers too. And Molly, I don't know if you want to talk about staffing at all relative to these numbers and the changes, or if you're good with them.
Sure. So with elementary, you know, that kindergarten number is so unpredictable. So we follow those really, really closely. And we actually are staffed to enrollment, so we ended up not staffing all the way out in our elementary. So, for example, we're too short at Bayview that we did not fill. So that was great. So we're not overstaffed. We didn't staff to projections. We staffed to kind of actuals as they were growing, especially within the elementaries, watching that kinder number. So even though that number is lower in elementary than projections, our classes are full, and we're not, you know, maybe overstaffed at one school by one teacher, but that is kind of our overflow place, and it's been filling up for folks that are coming in and enrolling late. We have been working with our secondary principals and trying to see where we're over, where we're under, and making any changes that we can make at this point. To not mess up student schedules, but also try to get class sizes to where they want to be. It's a delicate balance, but I think we hit it pretty as close as we could have, you know, given the complexity of it.
Patty, you have a question.
Thank you. I know we'll know further by the actual CBEDS report, and this is just preliminary. Don't know if you can extrapolate it, but I am curious to know that in our returning elementary school population, if it is actually the same population, meaning if 100% of the third graders were 100% of the same second graders from the school. And I just ask about that in our housing trends and what that might look like and how it might play. So I appreciate that. I appreciate these preliminary numbers. Thank you.
I can tell you, Patty, that, you know, there's always movement in every grade level. I think for the large majority, most kids are rolling over, but there are families moving out, and there were families moving out late in August. And so it's not 100%, but I would say the bulk of students are going from grade level to grade level.
I just ask because in my rationale when making decisions, sometimes the numbers may stay the same, but if the population is changing, even though they're third graders, it may require more work depending on the type of student transitioning in and out. And so I just want to make sure that I'm clear to that moving forward. Thank you.
Claudia.
Okay, well, first of all, congratulations. I think you did a great job reading the tea leaves, I guess. How many of the students are not in their neighborhood schools, that are in the overflow schools?
No one.
We had a few when we first opened up. They were all offered a spot back in the neighborhood school by the end of the second week. Some of them chose to return, some of them liked where they were.
Great.
So at this point, everybody's really wanted.
Thank you.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I'm on the second page of the report, and I just want to make sure that in broad terms I'm getting this right. We're seeing a decline at Bayview of 68 students, a decline in Villa Viega of 68, a decline at Galt of 10, and a decline at Westlake of 18. So we really do have some relief, if I'm reading this correctly, at Bayview and De La Viega, where we had some complaints that schools were very full, but we still have a fairly full Westlake. Am I is that correct? Okay. Thank you.
Dee Dee.
Pat, you mentioned on a couple of different occasions in your summary
that you were going to look at factors that these variances are associated with. And I was wondering if you could just give me a sense of what data factors are you anticipating that you're going to look at that might be affecting these variances.
Some of the conversations I had with the superintendent regarding some of the growth we've seen in the high schools, which we've heard from some of our staff, attributed to some of the students coming back from private, in particular private charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to understand that. Is this an isolated instance, or might this be a trend that we might see?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was referring to when I was speaking to that.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Did you guys have further questions?
Okay.
Any comment from public? Okay, this is just a report, so thank you. Oh, Casey. Sorry, the microphone doesn't, I don't have a teacher voice, annoyed mom voice, but I don't have a teacher voice.
So I just wanted to comment, Casey Carlson, on behalf of the Federation, that I printed the report out ahead of time, but we're used to being able to see it on the screen and having a copy of the board presentations over on the side. And there are people sitting out in the audience who are confused, who weren't able to follow along with what Pat was saying. So it would be helpful to have at least either on the screen or up on the screen.
Any other comment? Okay, our next item is the staff report on unaudited actuals.
Yeah, thank you. I want to thank Mr. Tor and his team for, first of all, for their work on this. And share with you at a high level, we provide you a narrative. First of all, Fair, I welcome it if you can meet one-on-one, if there are suggestions you see in other districts you'd like us to model or replicate in regards to the budget and simplification, and if there is something that we can, a software, something that makes it easier for folks to understand. So absolutely our intent is to try and make this as simple as possible for people to understand. So if there's, I'm happy to meet with you to talk about that. First and foremost, we provide you a quick summary with the intent of trying to keep this very simple. A summary and kind of a page and a half summary of the different funds and the variances. I wanted to point out initially that on the cover sheet, although I'd love this to be the case, but at the end of the first sentence where we have a background, we talk about how this reflects a $631K increase in the unrestricted imbalance and a $356,000 increase in the restricted imbalance. A total increase of $986 million. That should be $986K, not $986 million. Thank you, Mr. Jordan, trying to get some money, but just for the record. So, and recall last year when we went through this exercise, we had a very significant variance between our estimated actuals and our unaudited actuals. And recall too that we work with our employee association because we had a mutual concern that there was a significant variance that we breathe into our contracts language that says we're going to revisit this because our intent, not unlike what Jeremy was suggesting earlier too, but our intent at all times is that this information, that we all understand it really well and understand what the fluctuations are and what are factors that are impacting our budget. So we want to have that common understanding. And so this year, we do have a variance between our estimated actuals and our unearned actuals. Last year, at points in time during the year, we had a substantial amount of items that were still encumbered. And for the young folks on our board, encumber means that there are purchase orders, that there's an intent to spend that money. And so in our budget, there's items built in our budget that says we expect that expense to occur. So throughout the year last year, we said we're going to focus on, from a process perspective, managing those encumbrances. And we did that. We had a significant reduction in those anticipated expenditures, but yet we still have this variance in our ending balance. Now, the language in our contract speaks that we had a variance of 2% or greater. There would be things we'd work on together. We still have a variance, and what's most important to me is I've talked with Trevor, I've talked with Stacy too, because a big portion of this variance has to do with maintenance operations and with special education. And so what we're going to do now is Greg Tor and I are going to go through line item by line item again, like we did earlier, and we're going to understand why we have those variances again. And from a percentage perspective, we're talking about a 0.5% variance. Relative to what we experienced last year, 5%, it's a big improvement. But the important thing for me to understand important thing for all of you to understand, most of what is important for our public to understand, is that if we've seen this variance, what your documents and what the budget shows right now is our ending balance at the end of the... I'm sorry, let me back up for a second. Every time a district does a budget, we have to do a three-year budget that shows that the district's going to have a balanced budget for the current year and the next prospective couple of years, right? And so when we go through this exercise of closing the books this year, when we have a variance between what our estimate is and our unaudited actuals are, then we take that amount, and we'll, at this point in time, what we've shown is that our ending balance at the end of year three, that balance is carried forward in each of those years. Because nothing's been built into our budget yet that says that those dollars are going to be spent on the unrestricted or the restricted side. Okay? So it's important for us to understand what, from a process perspective, contributed to those variances, because what we need to do now is we need to understand that although we have this money from 16-17 and we know there's a variance, if there is something that programmatically we need to revisit, that is going to adjust our expected expenditures for 17-18 and similarly for 18-19 and 19-20, that $600,000 variance in 1 year is $600,000. But if that $600,000 is something we need to revisit over 3 years, then you're talking about a significant amount of money. If you just use $600,000 times three, you're looking at $1.8 million, right? So absent any other changes. So that's the exercise we're going to go through. We're going to share it with you. We're going to share it with our employees. We're going to share it with our organizations so that we all have an understanding of why there was a variance. Is it one time? Is it a recurring thing we need to revisit? And then we'll breathe that into the budget. We'll share with our budget advisory committee. We'll share with you. And then when we bring back the first interim report, we'll incorporate that information into the first interim report to you. So we can plan and understand, is this an isolated incident? Is it going to be a recurring savings we experience? And then what does that do to our multiple-year trend, right? So what are we going to do with those dollars? And so that's kind of the big picture, what we're looking at, too, this year on the unrestricted side. We had $600,000 variance between the estimated and the unaudited. And then on the restricted side, about $300,000. And so we're gonna like we did with all those other encumbrances, we went through this exercise, we carved out a lot of those things, and now we're going to spend time and go through these details and understand that, and then we're going to breathe into our budget. We're going to breathe in if we think that those dollars will be built into as available funds at just one time or on a recurring basis. Okay? And so those numbers from a any balance may change if we think that we need to make adjustments in each of those prospective years. Okay? So that's kind of really big picture, one of the things I want to share. And then the other thing, quick comment I wanted to share, and Casey, thanks for your comment yesterday, which is why I wanted to share this. Because there's a comment here I asked Greg too in the future when we talk about those things. It talks about books and supplies expenditures decreased $466,000. So it's not we necessarily decreased expenditures. We didn't incur those expenditures. We had a budget. We didn't take money away from expenditures. So, but just we need to, in terms of your point earlier too, Jerry, if someone's reading this, we didn't deliberately take an action to decrease our expenditures. We didn't incur those expenditures.
They just didn't happen.
Right? Okay. So, again, but it's just kind of to if you're from the general public reading this and trying to understand, did you decrease or did you just not experience those? And then what's important for us to understand, why are we not experiencing those? Are they restricted? Are they unrestricted? Is it a funding timing issue? Is that why it didn't incur? Again, it goes back to communication. I work with Frank, I work with Julia and Marianne. We're going to all these categorical dollars, you know, CTIG, all these different things. We have a breakdown of all these things. So we're going to go through it one by one by one, and we're going to spend even more time this year of continuing to understand this even more thoroughly so that we're informed and we're making informed decisions. And not only do we understand it here at the dais, but that our community at large understands. It's really important. We go back to the LCAP concept, too, is that our community should understand this stuff. So that's kind of big picture. Recap and information for you. And so, if I can add one more thing. We did have a preliminary letter from the county that says they're going to approve the budget. A couple things that they had called out and they want us to continue to monitor. One was we got built into our budget a 95% ADA threshold. They said we've not experienced 95% ADA over the past several years, so we need to revisit that as a team. because we've got built our budget, we expect 95% ADA. And then the other last thing is, they said as a reminder, I think this is blank language that they have, but there's something called OPEB, and OPEB is our liability for post-employment benefits. And what some districts do is they create a fund to fund those dollars. What we do as a district, we do it as on a pay-as-you-go model. So on an annual basis, we make adjustments to our contributions for our post-employment benefits. But some districts, I don't have many, but some, I'm not sure exactly who, but I hear some, set aside money in a reserve explicitly for that purpose. So it's not an ongoing pay-as-you-go general fund obligation, but there's money set aside for that obligation that is funded through the concept of kind of a trust.
Yeah.
So that's just a couple of comments from the county, and that's really a high-level 20,000-foot view of our district budget, where we landed, what our next steps are going to be, and we continue to learn about this district and this budget. We'll make adjustments to it, and we'll educate you and our community at large.
Jeremy.
So, Pat, what I'm hearing is we're close to $1 million to the good from where we thought we would be. That's the variance, right? As we have about a $70 million budget, if we had been $1.4 million to the good, breaching that 2% threshold, then certain language is triggered, everybody gets a pay raise or something. We go back to our bargaining meetings, but we're not at that. We're sort of at 1%, 1.3% or something like that. Okay, and then the other thing, if you'd allow me, so then you and Greg, Mr. Torrey, your job is to comb through these columns and see, is this an ongoing, or is this almost $1 million variance based on ongoing funding that we're miscalculating, we're not seeing it, or is it just a one-time thing?
Right.
When can we, as that has real budget implications in terms of this board's negotiations at some point or another with the bargaining units, when can we expect to hear from you about that?
Well,
thank you.
Sure. One is I want to be very respectful when we talk about negotiations, and so I just want to be cognizant of the discussion in open session around negotiations and being very respectful of that. But process-wise, Jared, technically when you're going to see these adjustments to the budget will be your first interim. Your first year is October 31st, right, time frame. But certainly, it's going. We started the conversation yesterday, and so I was listening. So My hope is to do it soon with Jeremy, because we do have some dates for negotiations set up, and I think behooves all of us to understand. But technically, for you to act on it, we'll come back to you. But we'll want to learn as quickly as we can.
No, one more follow-up. I appreciate the October 31st as an outside thing, and I understand your reticence to tie it in any way to negotiations. In terms of the executive summary of the budget, as you've mentioned it, I think I could speak to it. I don't think that it would take that long to put together, so of this $70 million, 90% is spent on salaries and benefits for our certificated, classified, and administrative. So what I'm looking for is a very simple sort of a pie chart. And that means, you know, that's already $63 million. So then everybody sees, oh, well, there's really only $7 million that we're talking about. Of those $7 million, the LCAP, you know, our vision of how we're going to work with these four groups that we need to work with, it takes up about half of that or something. So just very big, bold things. I think it could be very helpful and very powerful when I get lost in the small print and maybe some of our audience members get lost in it. That's all I mean, just
sure.
Right on one page.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Claudia, Sheila, did you have a question?
Yes. I just wanted to understand your comment about the, now I can't think how you said it, having a fund set aside.
It's referred to as OPEB.
It's a who?
It's O-P-E-B.
O-P-E-B.
Yeah. Post-employment benefits.
Okay. So you're just saying that this, you're not saying this is something that, my first thought was, it's kind of like closing the barn door after the horse gets out, as my mother used to always say. You know, I mean, we don't have enough because we didn't do this before. But are you saying that you would like to both the state of California pay for what we should have paid for, plus have a fund so that it won't happen again?
Well, what I was trying to call your attention to is when Deb receives a letter from the county office, one of these called out in that letter, and I think this is fairly boilerplate because I'm not sure how many districts have actually done this. But we're aware that there are some districts who have set aside funds for those post-employment benefits so that it's not an annual burden on your general fund. Some districts might have the means to set aside funds.
That's what I was thinking.
I think that, you know, the other thing too is that what this report calls out is that this is an increasing cost for districts. Uh-huh. And I think it's really a reminder for districts that this is, there is an increase you're going to see, and we've planned for it, but you need to plan for it. But there's also an instrument that's available for folks that says if you want to set aside funds in a reserve, then you can do that. And my understanding is that 1560, the board received a report, that actually spoke to that liability. And that's what's used as a basis to develop what this obligation is. But there's an instrument, Sheila, and again, when you see this report from the county, they're going to speak to that in that report.
It's important to note, too, that our post-employment benefit costs are going down because of how we've negotiated our contract to have more of a share in health and welfare costs.
Mm-hmm.
So we should see that number.
Mm-hmm. Relative to what it was, Chris,
yeah.
Before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, please.
We're going to be, an actuarial study will be performed early this year. So that's going to happen also, which will tell us what those liabilities are.
What they are now and what they...
Yeah. Projecting forward and what the pay-as-you-go option is and what this, it's an irrevocable trust.
Okay.
So, but and they're significantly different, mm-hmm. but the board will be able to see what is the fiscal impact of the district.
Okay, thank you.
Are there further questions from the board? Any comment or question from the Casey? From the Casey. From Casey.
Casey Carlson from the Federation. I hadn't intended to get her because we met and heard about the budget yesterday. First of all, I did thank Pat and Greg for clarifying the books and supplies. And as he explained it, it's not that there's less money for books and supplies, but George Martinez, who's our former president, taught me years ago, he said, watch in KC because they always hide their money. So we appreciate that being clear. My second comment is, once again, I'm used to seeing, I have this printed out ahead of time, but I'm used to seeing it there and having extra copies for the public, and that's not available tonight, and I think it benefits everyone here to be able to have, to follow you along with that when you're speaking. Third comment is that we just had big alarm bells go off with the OPIB, the reserve, because we have heard that in districts that have that, it's once again used as a way to grow the reserve in a way that monies are not yet available. We do have the 3-year projection out. As Chris said, our costs are going down because of our benefit split, so you know, we're always open to hearing ideas, but we would just at the get-go think that pay-as-you-go would continue to be a good option. We wouldn't be in favor of that unless we heard something different. And the other thing was, again, I did not want to come up here to talk about negotiations, but Jeremy, since you kind of broached on that topic a little bit, we are in complete agreement with Pat and Greg that there was no 2% you know, variable in our favor. There is a variable in favor of the district. There were surplus funds, and so you kind of stated that, well, then that wouldn't be available for negotiations, and I just want to let you know that our conclusion in terms of the amount of surplus left might be different than what you stated.
Point of clarification, okay. I didn't say that wouldn't be available.
Okay. You know, we're not supposed to discuss negotiations in open session.
I don't want to discuss it. I just... because it sort of sounded like that, I just want to say that we might have, in the end, we might have a different conclusion than you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So this item came to us as a report, but it actually has a recommendation to certify the actuals. Actuals. Thank you. So
I move that we certify the unaudited actuals.
Is there a second?
Oh, thank you. There was a recommendation.
Yeah, it was stated in the cover. Mm-hmm. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Student recommendation. Sorry, I forgot
abstain.
You.
Abstain.
Okay. Students abstain. It's unanimous.
Thank you. Who made the motion?
Sheila.
Thank you.
And Dee Dee.
Thank you so much.
Oh, Patty. Okay, so our next item is. I went back to the wrong date again. Stupid board pads, not. The resolution for the board. Oh, no, the GFCFT Sunshine proposal, sorry.
Yeah.
Item 8.3.6.
So I report a proposal for Sunshine for the GFCFT for 2017-18. We will be bringing ours in the next meeting as well. And we actually met yesterday and had a great conversation and talked about some issues and agreed that we want to continue negotiations like we've been doing it, which is much more discussion and sharing of ideas. So it was very productive. And so I bring forth a recommendation for approval on the sanctioned items.
Are there questions from the board? Any questions or comments from the public? So this is a recommendation of staff to
remove approval.
Second.
I think it was Patty this time.
Thank
second. It's a resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so student recommendation.
Abstain.
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay. Oh, this is a resolution.
Yeah.
We voted. Oh well, we did fancy. Our next item is a resolution regarding the board vacancy.
So this evening, we're bringing forward a timeline and a plan for filling Trustee Thompson's vacancy per her resignation that was effective on August 24th. We have 60 days per Ed Code to decide how we're going to fill that vacancy. It is my recommendation that we go through a process of application and appointment. It would cost us at least $150,000 for an election, and we wouldn't be eligible for an election until June. So we'd have a short appointment for until her term ends in November. It's a much less expensive process for us to advertise the vacancy, take applications, and do interviews. And so I've outlined a timeline for what that would look like. It would include a special board meeting on October 11th to interview candidates. And if given direction this evening, we have the applications and the press release ready to go out tomorrow to continue moving forward to meet this timeline.
Questions from the board? Sheila, go ahead.
I just wanted to understand the process a little bit. The resolution separate from the timeline. The process was a little unclear about whether we would have a board committee and why, when we would decide to do that, when we wouldn't, and it was a little unclear as to whether we will get all of the applications prior to the meeting.
So the way it will work, if we have more than 6 applicants, the board president will appoint a committee to review those applications to narrow it to 6.
Oh, okay, so narrowing it to 6. I was trying to figure out why we were doing it at 6.
To narrow it to 6.
Okay.
In part because we have to do public interviews, and more than 6 would make for a, you know, into the midnight hours. Mm-hmm. So that would be the process, that if we received more than six applications, then the board president would appoint a committee.
And then the board will get the applications prior to
yes.
the meeting so that we could review them.
Yes, the board will receive the applications, become a public document, and the applications say that on them. So as when the minus the personal contact information for the candidates, those documents become public record, and they'll be published as part of a board book that will come to you in advance. So you'll be able to review all of the applications prior to the interviews.
Okay. Thank you.
Jeremy.
It's a small town. I guess I'm directing this towards Chris. Any kind of guidelines as to when and under what conditions a board member would serve the interests of the board best by recusing him or herself?
There was a relative applying for a position.
That's all?
That's the direction I've had so far. I know we are a small community, and one of the processes that I'm looking at us using is a ballot process. The ballots are public record, but using a ballot process for the vote. In open session, because the vote has to happen in open session.
Dee Dee.
Once we get to the interview, assuming this, we make a decision tonight, if and when we get to the interview process, is it like a traditional interview where we have a set number of questions that we ask each of the candidates, and we be very careful not to stray from those sets of questions? That's one part. And if so, then who is drafting those interview questions, and will we have an opportunity to have input on those questions?
So I've spent some time drafting questions. I took some from CSBA. I took some from another board. I've been investigating different resources for board interviews. I stole some from SLV and Pacific Grove, who both went through this process this year. So I've narrowed it down to 11 questions that I was going to review with the board president.
Okay.
And on the dais, they all have the evaluation.
Yeah. I also provided to you from CSBA, it's a document on evaluating a candidate. So I just had that there for your reflection. And this is a document that comes from CSBA on filling a board vacancy.
I had one at every spot, so you should all have one. And if not, there are some back on the counter.
And I was just going to comment to the question. I may be mistaken, but it's not a job interview, so we don't have to ask the exact same question. But my recommendation would that we would do the questions as we do in forums when we are holding an election, that every candidate asks the same question, that we take turns who gets the question first, that everybody gets to get the question last. Format, so that we ask the same questions. That would be my recommendation.
And then one of the things we also talked about was giving all the candidates all the questions at the beginning of the mm-hmm. forum. Mm-hmm. Just like we do that for candidates who come in for an interview, we give them the questions before they sit down for the interview so that they'd have a half hour or so to review them before they came in. Jeremy, to your question, what I've talked to legal counsel about is relatives. I'll ask them if there are anything more that we should be thoughtful about. I just haven't had a chance to ask yet. I'm waiting for time when I have to be on the phone with them anyway.
Sheila, of the 11 questions,
mm-hmm.
Can we see them so that we can give feedback to the board president?
Sure.
So I'll go ahead and send those out. I want to make sure that we don't have any problem with serial meeting in doing that. So I need to talk to legal counsel and find out if I can send that out for people to contribute, or we can agendize it and talk about it in public, but then our questions become public ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
So let me find out.
That's tricky.
Yeah, let me find out. I'll ask that question.
Patty.
How would we make
a suggestion for a question that we might have if it's not addressed through the 11 questions? Just thinking about the community and what they asked of us and what we might be asking of soliciting other candidates. Curious in that process.
So let me ask about development and whether we can do that collectively or not.
It may be that we would have to have a committee for that. In other words, it would have to be a representative group.
Yeah, we do have a timeline, so I don't know. Yeah. We may have to do it in a way that the superintendent directly interacts with you all. We have the 60 days, so. Because tomorrow we're going to advertise.
Right. Yeah, so we may have to do it that way.
Are there further questions? Other questions or comments from the public?
Matt Ritter, JCFT. Just a point of clarification. Will the names of these six applicants, or the applicants in general, will they be available to the public for the October 11th meeting?
They'll be released in the board book the 72 hours beforehand.
Okay, so
move to approve the resolution.
The resolution to move forward with the...
Second.
That was Claudia and then Didi.
I'm sorry.
And then Didi.
Thank you so much.
Student recommendation?
Aye.
Okay, so our next item is an informational item on the superintendent's goals for 2017-18.
So I shared with you all my goals and our action plans for the year, and we talked about it in closed session last week. We talked about them being ambitious, and in the document enclosed in the board book, you asked me to highlight a few of them. That was a difficult task. I've got to tell you to go back and look at it and think about which of those items were... items that I would highlight as priority items, because they're all important to me. But I did do that in the book, and as with last year, and we talked about this when we met. There are some items that will evolve and change because needs may come up that we haven't foreseen, and it might shift focus, and I'll give an update on where we are in January this year with these. So with that in mind, I'm not going to read it all to you, but we'll talk about some of them as we move forward. All of my goals and action items are based on our district goals, and we all know them very well. Under goal number one, this is a new item for us, and it's one of my highlighted items, the finalizing... and should be finalized and begin to implement. And the D got left off there somehow. Oh. And begin to implement the curriculum master plan and EL roadmap. We are continuing to work to implement the Common Core standards. We're implementing the second year of math adoptions in elementary and high school. We're piloting an ELA, ELD adoption in elementary. And we want to support secondary ELA teachers with Common Core implementation, developing some aligned writing assessments. We're continuing to expand our NGSS implementation with the support of our NGSS coach. We want to use the EL roadmap that we developed last year to really build a comprehensive English learner master plan. And we're supporting our site with implementation of visible learning strategies, those high-yield, research-based instructional strategies that the skill teams talked about earlier this evening. I'm continuing to serve in my role on the Santa Cruz County College Commitment. New this year, I'm serving as the Vice President of the SELPA Board, and taking a greater leadership role in the governing board for our regional CELPLA. And we'll continue to, you know, grow and learn in my leadership in that role and advocate for the needs of the students in Santa Cruz City Schools as part of that greater CELPLA. And I highlighted that as one of my focus items for this year. Continuing to refine our articulation efforts, smooth final transition of our ROP staff. We're excited about implementing our computer science pathways, and now, and I didn't add this, but the new computer science K-8 grant that we have in collaboration with the Santa Cruz Education Foundation. Also working to refine and market all of our pathway programs, our career pathway programs to our students. And we now have, as our staff member, I'm super excited that we got Sherry Williams, who I think is the best CTE ROP counselor in the county, and she's wonderful, and she's really working to align the guidance, career guidance programs at all three of our high schools. For goal number two, the items that I really put as an area as a focus, this first one here, refining and monitoring our response to intervention framework. And I've been talking about this with teachers and with our staff. The state is shifting from the language, you know how we change our language in education all the time. Response to interventions is now being talked about as multi-tiered systems of support. So we'll begin to start to see that going from RTI to MTSS. And I think it's actually a better acronym because it's about providing tiers of support for kids based on what their needs are. And I like that acronym better. The other area of focus that I identified for that second goal is using data effectively to evaluate programs and identify needs in a timely way. So continuing to refine our use of data to evaluate all of these things that we're doing so that we know that we're putting our energy and our resource into the highest impact strategies to support students. So goal number three about closing the achievement gap. I started four of these. One of them is, again, around data. Really having a grade span dashboard to report on program progress for our RTI coordinators so that at each grade span, we have a set of measures that we're looking at to monitor the progress of the work and the programs we're implementing so that we know that the investment is having an impact on student outcomes. The other thing I have is continue to build principals and assistant principals capacities in supporting professional learning community work at their sites. Developing measures to monitor the impact of instructional coaching and convening the English Learner Task Force to develop an EL master plan using our EL roadmap as areas of focus. All of these, again, are very important to me, but those are focus areas. For goal number four, I identified four items there as focus areas too. Continuing to support and refine the roles of our skilled leaders. Continuing to explore staff housing support options to facilitate recruitment and retention of wonderful employees. Participating in the California Labor Management Initiative to support effective collaboration with our bargaining units. And implementing monthly grade span leadership site visits. This is new for us. We've done site visits in the past, but this one is really around supporting the professional learning and vertical articulation efforts of our school leaders so that we all better understand what's happening in our school sites and can support each other and support the implementation of the work that we're trying to do. Where do we see those tiers of support working? Where do we see visible learning in our classrooms? Where are the places that are having great success so that we can build on them and learn from them? And goal number five. I'm not sure. So this is around balanced budget and effective management. This year, the start items that I put were support school sites and departments with budget management. Digital schools has been a challenging tool for us. And I'm really excited that Greg and Pat have plans along with Suzanne, and supporting our site and department managers with managing their budget using this tool that can be tricky and difficult at times. And also finalizing our plan for the Natural Bridges campus and developing a plan for the relocation of the central office, or to accommodate the needs at SoCal High School, wherever that relocation may be. And then goal number six, continuing to work to message the district vision goals and metrics with staff and community. That user-friendly translated summary of the LCAP, that executive summary, to better facilitate communication with stakeholders. I want to call out a thank you to Mary Ann Robb. I don't know if she's still here, but she took a bunch of content that I put together and put it in a really great format that came into my inbox today, so you'll be seeing a version of that really soon. Continuing to work to be visible and connected with school sites, and being connected to various community organizations that support Santa Cruz City Schools' visibility and connection with our greater community, and all these other things too. So those are the kind of outline of the work that we're working on this year, and I welcome your questions and feedback and thoughts.
Yeah, but what are you going to do with the rest of you?
That's why we had a streamline. Any other questions or comments for Chris?
Seriously, thank you for sharing. Yeah. I appreciate that.
I just have a quick comment. I want to really highlight and applaud the efforts for our English language learners in coming up with a master plan about how to meet their needs and then close that achievement gap. And then also, I was very happy to see the restorative justice implementation at the high schools. I think there's a real need for that. And high school students are very capable of embracing and having advocacy for their own sense of order and how that process works at their school site, and they can translate that beyond the school site in their futures. So thank you for being there.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
I was hoping to see at least the beginning of a master plan for social science, but I'm assuming that's going to come down the road next school year. We do have new frameworks for Common Core. What's your thinking about in terms of looking at creating some sort of vertical team or doing some work around history, social science?
So in that finalized begin the implementation of the curriculum master plan, it would fall under that. Part of what our challenge is it's a really ambitious plan, and that plan requires resources. And we don't have a budget associated with that plan yet outside of the math adoption, which was planned for through, and GSS that were planned through the EEFG grant. So what we're going to hopefully do, and there are, you know, you asked Mr. Bruner, his team is going to a training on the new framework. So there's work being done. It's just we're not to the place where we can put dollars to all of the components of that plan yet. And that's part of what we'll need to do and make a plan. You know, we need to adopt textbooks. We need to in some grade levels. We don't have to adopt text in all grade levels. One of the things we were talking about was that there are incredible open source resources. And so we have more leeway 9-12 than we do K-8 to that effect. So that's one of the things that we'll be working with our teachers on as we look at adoptions, how we want to implement, what materials are best for different content areas, and that'll be a collaboration with our teachers as we move forward.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sheila?
I'm always amazed at how much you take on and do it well. So I really appreciate that. I'll echo Jeremy's. I'm hoping to go from refining and monitoring the RTI frameworks to developing measures to monitor the effect on students with disabilities. And I was trying to find, I swear there was another place here among these where it mentioned the community, the parent community. And
number six.
Is it number six?
Mm-hmm.
And I was also equally hoping in that, I can't find six now, I must have it underneath. Anyway, that there might be a chance to work on organizing a way to work with those parents to effectively prepare their, to work together to prepare their students for how to take on post-secondary education with a disability, because there is within the colleges and universities a very refined way that's it's very clear to the students what they need to do in order to succeed, and I'm hoping that we can help to have a similar model at secondary level so that they're ready, that we think of it the way we do with other subjects where we're getting them ready.
So the transition planning that teams do you feel like that doesn't cover that, the whole transition plans?
No, I don't think that frankly, it's been a few years, so I can't be that. I don't think it covers it at all. It covers a different way of looking at what are you let's think about what you're transitioning to. But there's a way in which a child can reach higher level education with a disability, and how they go about accessing it that is not touched.
Let's talk more about
and
that.
And monitoring how we're doing with that is something I'm hoping will come in the next year or two. If that makes sense.
So let's talk more, because I want to better understand exactly what.
Otherwise, I can't believe I'm even suggesting something else.
Add more to the clearly.
Are there any comments from the public? Okay. Thank you, Chris. Good luck. our next item is the board policies, first and final reading on board policy 35511 regarding the cafeteria fund.
And these are submitted for either first or final, whatever you prefer.
Oh, sorry.
I don't want to hold you up if you want to make them final, but if you want to make them
first,
that's great.
First and slash or final.
Okay, so this is the cafeteria fund, and then section 504, identification of students. Nancy, do you mind running us through really quickly the major changes in these?
Yeah, let me pull up the guide sheet. Kind of just about what happened. Okay. So for the food service cafeteria plan, this policy was just updated to reflect some new federal guidance, which mandates that any district participating in the National School Lunch and or Breakfast Program adopts a written policy on meal charges, including the collection of delinquent meal charge debt no later. Actually, this was supposed to have been done no later than July 1st, 2017, or a little late, and to annually communicate that policy to parents and guardians. Amy Hendrick Farr and Patrick Gaffney, reviewed this, and they are happy with the language that's coming forth in the revision of this policy. So they feel comfortable with the language here and the guidelines that the CSBA has recommended. It also reflects new state guidance, which requires district policy to ensure that students with unrecovered or delinquent meal charge debt are not overtly identified, that debt collection efforts are consistent with specified cost principles, and establishes conditions for reclassifying unpaid debt as bad debt so that it, it's not possible to collect, then it's reclassified into a different way for students who may not be able to actually make a payment on that debt. Policy has also been revised to reflect the Buy American provision of federal regulations, which requires district to the maximum extent practicable to purchase domestically grown and processed foods. And I think everybody's already aware that Amy Hendrick Farr is a leader in our county in this regard, and her consortium for buying and, including using other districts and providing buying power has produce great yields for all of our county districts. So I don't think there's anything really new there for us. I think we're way ahead of that game. And for the identification and education under Section 504, the policy was just updated to add requirements to address the needs of students with disabilities in the local control and accountability plan.
Jeremy, do you have a question?
Yeah. I've talked to Chris about this in our conversations. I would just point out that the language is, as always, the governing board intends that school food services shall be a self-supporting nonprofit program. I'm emphasizing self-supporting, and yet year after year we take, this year, if you look at page 319, $346,000 from the general fund. And I realize that this, I'm not opening the door now to the topic of closed campuses or not, but I am wondering whether other districts that don't have closed campuses, that have open campuses, somehow negotiate or figure out a way to reduce that general ed encroachment there. We're every dollar counts in every area, that's $346,000 ongoing cost. So I don't begrudge the kids a penny in terms of good, wholesome food, but I do think it's in our interest to look at it and look at it again and see if we can find a way to reduce that cost.
We're bringing it to you, well, the agenda committee is in, but I'm working with the superintendent for the next board meeting to bring you a contract with school services to do that exact analysis, Jeremy. So we know what's happening.
I really appreciate that. And it may be that that's the cost, but, you know, given the parameters that we have. Yep. But maybe we can find a way to reduce that by $100,000. That's ongoing money, and then that frees that up for all sorts of other things. Thank you.
There are further questions on these items from the board. Other questions or comments?
So, Enda Brennan, I'm a member of the Board of Directors of Life Lab, which is, I think most of you are probably familiar with, because several of your schools have Life Lab gardens in there. I just wanted to call to your attention, and many of you may have already seen it, but there was a very in-depth article in the New York Times last week in the food section about the school lunch program. And I was interested because they were saying that there were 7,001 gardens, school gardens, in the United States. But the other thing that they were highlighting was that a number of progressive communities have now gone to an absolute no fee required for school lunches. And New York was the latest and the largest city in the country to join this program about a week or 10 days ago. And what the article highlights is that because there are significant costs and associated with allocating people that are qualified for a subsidy and those that are for moderate income, et cetera, that for several school districts, especially the larger school districts, so it may not apply to us, but for several of the larger school districts, there's no actual cost loss to them making school lunches free because there is actually an amount that is provided for by the federal government. So I'm just hoping that you guys are taking a look at that, and it may not work for our school district, but it's definitely something to consider. And they highlighted also testimony from members of the New York City Council, the City Council, of young people that were on the City Council in New York that were saying that they were food shamed, and I'm not saying that's happening in our community. I think you guys are really careful about trying to make sure that doesn't happen, but this councilman did say that he wouldn't actually get lunch because he would have to identify himself as somebody who was receiving a subsidy amongst his friends. And so he just, you know, oh, that food's no good, whatever, you know, and sort of avoid all that. So I'm just hoping that we're clued into that in our community and that if there is the opportunity for us to consider not charging people at all, it's a cost issue. I know you guys need to sort of work out all the numbers. But, you know, I couldn't download the book here today, the book that you guys all have. So I wasn't able to actually get into the specifics of what this resolution was, but I did want to highlight that article for you and let you know that there are potentially other ways to address the school lunch issue, because it is a super important issue. You guys provide not just nutrition for the brain, but nutrition for the body.
Thank you. Are there further comments? So is this, Patty.
Mr. Brennan, I'd like to thank you for that comment because it does allow for me to think of this in a different frame. And though Jeremy brought a monetary piece to this, and I think the students may, as time goes on, help us weigh in on this, there is truth to a lunch program that serves the underserved while you have an open campus. Sometimes is only serving, it identifies just by that fact. So thank you for bringing that up.
So is there consensus regarding first or final? So is there a motion on that then?
I'll move to approve as final.
I second.
Student recommendations?
Aye.
Aye. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Unanimous. Thank you. We're going to take a short recess, and we're going to go back into closed session, and then we'll come back out and report. So that means you guys can
report. I didn't want to say this on the record, but I just want to say that that article last week also greatly caught my interest.
Yeah.
And I did a little research. Did you guys?
Yeah, no.
Because in the state of New York, they have 2.6 million children, and they spend an average of $20,000 per child for on their students. We have an average of 6.2 million children, almost the exact reversal of that number, and spend about $10,000 per student. So it's, I know, it's horrible, but I mean, it's hard for me to envision how California can make that same move in New York. You know what I mean? When I look at those numbers and say, wow, 2.6 million is a budget of...
No, that's a great... I mean, it's good to have people who are excited about that.
It's so distressing, isn't it? I was so interested by it too, and I thought, can we do that?
We did, you know, we were so proud.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nancy.
We're going to try to get you in here.
Yeah.
How are you?
our federal administration.
But it's the next person from Thomas Center.
And it wasn't even heard the way I heard it, so. And it's definitely a
bad
way.
What's that?
Good to see you. Thanks. Good night, guys.
Good night, Pat. Frank.
Yeah, that's
my son.
Oscar. I hope I
didn't
overstep when I said that we could also do by subtracting.
No, you're okay on the uptake. So I appreciated it. In fact, that was the mathematically the correct way to look at it. So I appreciated it.
You guys ready?
I just want to make sure the students are. Is Frank out there? Ready for them?
He was going to the restroom first.
Oh, yeah, thank you. No problem.
Nancy, do you mind staying with the students?
I am going to be staying anyway to clean up and hear your report when you come back out, so we're good.
No.
Okay, thank you.
In fact, it made me think about it correctly.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Nancy, a quick question.
We looked at that so many times.
And I'd like to talk to Trevor about the six.
Made me realize that I'm not
the planning agent,
but...
She there?
Yeah.
Just email me.
Okay.
Don't worry, just email me.
All right, you won't take it.
I hope I just remember, that's all. Because it made me realize something that I need to know how to do it. So
okay.
I'll try to remember.
No problem. I'll email you in the morning and say, Sheila, what did you want?
Oh, that would be great if you don't mind.
In fact, I'm going to do it right now while you're
going
to the
session. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you.
I'm going to email you and say, Sheila, you want to tell me something? What was it?
Yeah, because it's important and my brain is gone. Especially since I thought I was going to be shot dead today.